Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Yes, we do. We do. This is the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Naktiko.
And I'm Donna Prishkintas.
We gather here once a week in the studios of KHOI Community Radio to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions.
Oh, yeah.
And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. So for more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus. It's just on the south end of town.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
South Duff.
There you go. So today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to talk about, well, the potlucks are still going on, and we had a potluck recently. We'll mention a few good dishes there. We're going to talk egg policy. We're going to mention puppets and brunch and tomatoes and maybe get around to some other things, too.
Yeah, we're in the best part of the season, and boy, hasn't the weather been lovely, and no mosquitoes. This is just heavenly these days.
Iowa is just an absolute gem for weather. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it
the
is.
Breezes are blowing. The curtains are wafting in the kitchen.
Wafting.
Yes, I love it.
Good. So we did some things this weekend, and I'm going to turn things over to Cynthia McClure, our erstwhile excellent engineer. She did a fun thing this weekend, or actually a little toward the end of last week. Tell us what was going on, Cynthia.
Well, if you read the paper, I was in the paper along with my husband for Pub Fiction. Yeah, Pub Fiction. We got the, anyway, it was a lot of fun. It's a fundraiser for the Ames Public Library.
Yay, for the library.
And participating pubs had different themes, like Della Vitti had Treasure Island. And the Angry Irishman, also known as the former Dinos, was Lord of the Rings.
Oh, very good.
There were quite a few establishments. Whiskey River was Westerns.
Uh-huh.
So these are all based on books, and you could dress up as your favorite characters. And there's more establishments that were involved. Anyway, it was a good, clean fun. I dressed up as Madame Rosmerta from the Harry Potter movies and books, and she is a a bar owner, and I actually made cards for the bar.
Business cards, yes.
Business cards, and they're the three broomsticks in Hogsmeade. Uh-huh. And I was the Grim Reaper kind of last year. Actually, I was Mr. Death from Terry Pratchett. If you ever read his books, I was Mr. Death. I had a little tiny mouse that was dressed up as a little mouse, Mr. Death. Anyway, my husband reprised that costume and became a Dementor and was kind of, I was ditching him around town. He was trying to get me because he would walk into a bar as like Death and go, Rosmerta. It was kind of funny, actually, if you saw it. And then I would like go, Dementor, and leave. And anyway, it was a good, clean, fun.
And you made the
paper. I think
the Ames Tribune has a picture of the whole thing.
Yeah, it was fun. There were some really good costumes. Some people like,
And this is an annual event as a fundraiser for the library,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it's put on through the library and through the Friends Foundation.
Uh-huh.
And it's a good way to raise money for getting whatever the library needs.
Yeah, plus everybody talks about their favorite books.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great. And it's all fictional.
Great bar talk, right?
Actually, there are some really obscure books were mentioned that I had never read, and they were talking about characters, and I just smile and nod and go, I haven't read that one.
Well, there's lots of books we haven't read.
More to read, always more to learn,
and
the library is there for you to do that. And please support your local library and smaller communities, because every dollar they get really makes a difference.
Good.
Okay.
So that was Pub Fiction this last week, and a fun time had by all. Other things going on this weekend. We had talked about it before, but it happened. It happened. The Map of My Kingdom reading and gathering for the Ag Arts Association, Ag Arts Group, put on a drama, and there was some storytelling, and there was some good food. And it was like Map of My Kingdom deals with the transfer of land ownership.
Now, and it sounds like a dry topic, but it is a fantastic play. It is, sometimes it's Shakespearean, sometimes it's just funny. It's a good one.
It is, and we're glad that that happened. And keep your eyes open because Map of My Kingdom happens. It has actually traveled all over the country. It will show up again in Iowa. That's Ag Arts, A-G Arts, Ag Arts, and Mary Swander puts it on.
She wrote it.
You can Google Ag Arts and find out about Map of My Kingdom.
That's A-G-A-R-T-S, one word.
Yes.
Yes.
A fine group of people. We had a little bit of sprinkle, of course, but it was fine. We had a few. And, of course, did I mention there was food? Donna made a fine bunch of pork.
Pulled pork we had for everybody. Pulled pork on buns. And then the rest was potluck. So, oh, boy, did we have a lot of cucumber salads, fresh tomato. I mean, you know, you can see we are in the prime feeding season from the garden. It was glorious.
It is. At this time of year, you just want to cut up cucumbers. And I did. I did. I cut up cucumbers and lots of onions. And go for the little onions so you have lots of little onion rings. And then I used two kinds of peppers. I used a yellow hot wax pepper that you think would be way too hot, but I sliced it up so tiny, tiny that it didn't matter. Actually, quite a lot of them. And then a hot banana pepper from a seed company we'll be talking about later in the show.
And it was really delicious,
good,
Lana.
Good. And I had, of course, there's basil and cilantro and parsley and dill to put in this time of year. And then my kind of go-to cucumber dressing, olive oil, apple cider vinegar, a little bit of salt and pepper, quite a lot of salt and pepper. And I always put a teaspoon or a little bit more of sugar in there. Sometimes with the onions and the cucumbers, a little sugar does not go
in.
Yeah,
and that apple cider vinegar can be pretty, pretty tart. Yeah, so a little sugar with that is good.
Yeah. And then I don't always do this, but I did happen to have some really high milk fat yogurt, the kind that just kind of stands there like heavy cream. I put a couple dollops of that in there, so everything was kind of creamy. Ah, yes.
But it wasn't heavy.
No, cucumbers.
No, it was
cucumbers.
Really, really good.
Cucumbers. So celebrate cucumbers this time of year. And yes, there were other cucumber salads, and I think we ate everything. It was.
Yep. We wiped out the pork. And and there were some delicious desserts. Lots of, you know, we can cook good here in Central Iowa, I got to say.
Get together and share the bounty. Share the bounty. Donna, you've been looking into some news items, and we don't deal with politics here, but you cannot miss the fact that there are all these presidential candidates and debates and things going on. They talk about a lot of things, and one thing that we wish they would talk about lots more is how about the earth? How about farming? How about feeding us all? How about us here in Iowa? So what did you find out
this
weekend?
Well, you know, I've been to a few meetings of candidates, and especially I like to go when they're talking about what their agricultural policies are going to be. And the good news I want to report is that for this coming presidential election, I have never heard as much talk about farm policy as, I mean, you know, I can remember. I'll just tell a little story. When Barack Obama was first elected, you know, people weren't saying much about farm policy. But I happened to know someone who knew someone where a very high-end fancy chef was invited after they won the election, but before they moved to the White House, he was invited to their home in Chicago to cook for them and to talk about food policy. And I heard, and this was before Obama even moved to the White House, and this was not a public announcement, that basically he told this fellow, you know, I don't want a food fight during my administration, and Michelle is going to handle all of this. So, and that is, in fact, what he did. And, of course, he had to, you know, dig us out of a major financial recession and all of those other sort of things. But, you know, it is a thorny issue that he did not want to take on at that time. So I'm really thrilled that, you know, a lot of the candidates have specific ag policies, or they're mentioning things like, I think, you know, growing hemp, getting alternative things for farmers to grow. And, of course, it's counterbalanced. The Republicans are also quite concerned about farming because, you know, we're having the tariff wars, and then we've had massive flooding and late planting and lots of talk and some substance to additional subsidies for farmers, you know. And, you know, and you see this in the newspaper all the time. Of course, the farmers are going to take the money. They need it. There are plenty of farmers that are just not having a good year, and there are even more that are probably on the verge of bankruptcy. So, of course, they should take the money that is being offered. But, you know, this, you know, they say we don't really want a handout. What we want is an ag policy that works for us.
Fair prices. You know, you can only keep losing money on your farm, even with subsidies, for so long. And it's not because farmers are lazy or silly or don't know what they're doing. They, because of how they sell things and who sets the prices and who makes the rules, they're kind of at the short end of many sticks.
And this has been going on for a long time, you know, probably about at least 50 years, you could say, more or less. And there are a lot of farmers who don't know any other system. And we tend to forget, you know, when we've been doing something for a couple of generations that, yeah, you know, maybe there are options. We need to look at it. Because what's happened is, it's not that the food processors, the people that are buying the corn and beans and pork bellies, those guys are doing fine. They're making plenty of money. Their CEOs are getting, you know, multi-million-dollar benefits and stuff like that. But the provider of the raw materials has been given very, very little. They've been given short shrift, basically. And that's not right. You know, that comes to from consolidation and price. We won't have to say price fixing necessarily, but there has been some serious speculation that has been going on. So I have been hearing different, and we're not going to endorse anybody, but I am listening to different proposals. And, you know, people are, of course, the obvious one that is, you know, like with the Bayer-Monsanto merger, okay? Mm-hmm. So a little trust-busting could be in order, because we have now consolidated so much in terms of agricultural companies that they are completely monopolizing the market. That's kind of, I'm good to hear that we're thinking about that. I think it's long overdue. And mm-hmm. I would say there are probably people, farmers from both parties that would agree with that. The other thing, of course, is, a few years ago, there were listening sessions in different parts of the country about basically the companies that buy your cows and your pigs. There's so much consolidation there. And
the vertically integrated monsters.
Yes, those guys where, you know, they buy you the chicken, they give it to you, they give you the feed, you have to raise it, and this is not just chickens. And, you know, it turns out, of course, who's not making any money is the farmers. And where is all that profit going? And there's been some speculation of price fixing in those arenas. And, you know, we are due for an overhaul of that kind of and there was an intent to do that, and that got quashed by the powers that be. So that's another thing that needs to happen. Now, in the Midwest, in Iowa, to talk about climate change is, at this point, a divisive thing. So, wisely enough, some of the candidates are not really talking about climate change, but they are talking about some of the mechanisms that contribute to water quality and, you know, how to get more research. Interesting proposal. You know that in land-grant universities, of which Iowa State is the beginning, first, number one, whatever we are, in past years, the government has for many, 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 many years funded these universities. And thus the research coming out of places like ISU, which was paid for by taxpayer money, was applicable to many, many kinds of farming. In the past, oh, I don't know even how long, what do you think, maybe 20 or more years, as the tax base for the universities has been lowered and cut and lowered and cut and lowered and cut, the universities needing to, of course, stay in business and fund the professors and the research has turned to industry to sponsor studies, right? Okay, now when an industry pays for this study, what do you expect they want studied? Well, things that help their bottom line.
Well, and also they want to hear what they want to hear. I don't care. That's a human sort of thing.
Absolutely. And yes, this is the best study that money can buy, right? You know, and we've got, don't we have a Monsanto hall over there in the ag building and stuff like, I mean, you know, so some of the proposals have been to put more funding, public funding back into the land grant universities and then to, you know, I would say, for example, we have Practical Farmers of Iowa. One of the reasons we got this farmer-led nonprofit organization that is not connected to our university system is that farmers were not getting, some farmers were not getting the research answers that they wanted. So they started doing the research on their own farms, and they coordinated the research, you know, amongst, say, five farmers. So they're doing on, because they wanted to know what alternatives they had to the, you know, the mega chemical current growing system. Just little tweaks, you know, but that has grown into a very, very powerful, strong, farmer-based organization. But it grew out of the needs of farmers not getting what they needed from the land grants to some degree.
Re-looking at land grant missions is probably a good idea.
Right, and refunding the ones that are a little more publicly appropriate, not just supporting larger, you know, agribusiness interests. So these proposals have been floating around, and I think there's some very good discussions. And listen to some of what different candidates are saying. Even if you don't want to vote for them, it's good to think about some new ideas. This one candidate I listened to this week, what they had done is they chose a, I don't know, he looked like he was about 35 or 40, but he had a farming background. He had grown up on a farm, run his own farm. They sent him all over the state asking questions of farmers. What's the problem? What can we help you with? What's dealing? You know, and then they wrote their ag policy proposal. So this is, you know, this is not just, oh, we're coming to Iowa for the caucuses and to catch the headlines. Some of these candidates are doing some good groundwork, and I'm very pleased to see this. So we will all remember to vote, but before we vote, let's read what everybody has to say and think about what we want our future to be like.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, yes, we can all like change our light bulbs and buy energy efficient this and that. But some of this stuff has to happen on the national level.
Why
we have politics? Why we have
government? We have some, you know, like we have the EQIP program and some of these conservation programs. And the simple lever would be, you know, if we have too much corn and soybeans or we're having too many water quality products, some of these conservation practices can help. And the ideas in the policies have been, okay, let's amp up the funding for those. Let's pay farmers for these services. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to ask them, oh, you know, let's do cover crops and let's put this marginal land aside. But, you know, just do it for the good of your heart. You know, they're businessmen. They need to be paid for these environmental services. And those are some of the policies to watch for. I think some very good ideas are bubbling up in this campaign.
Yeah. This kind of stuff is really how we take care of the land, how we take care of our environment. It's not just all bunnies and duckies here. We're talking about food systems.
It's business. It's big, big business. Mm-hmm. And even a farmer, like, we didn't talk about this.
What?
PFI
what?
Just got a grant from, I think it's the EPA, right, that's almost $1 million.
Well, for goodness sake.
Yeah, to help. It's something to do with implementing the practices of cover crops for farmers, which is that's a big deal. I said to somebody in the PFI staff, so what are you going to do with all this money, you know? He said, oh, we're going to buy a BMW for every person on the staff.
Well, see how good that is? I'm so yeah. Now, practical farmers, I would not do that.
No.
I'm sure they're off to answer questions about this sequestering carbon and helping our land to be more sustainable, leaving the Earth a little bit better than what we after we're gone than what it is
well,
when we're here.
And the good news is doing all these environmentally helpful things actually is good for the bottom line. A farmer, his capital is in his land, and if you take care of the land, you build your soil up, you retain your water, that's good farming. And it makes economic sense as well. You don't have to be a rabid environmentalist. You just want to be a good businessman and a good steward for the assets that you have.
And these national policy things, yes, they
conversations
may, yeah,
is what
yeah,
they
conversations,
are.
Conversations,
really.
Yeah. You may think they might be dry as dust, but well, dry as dust is not a good metaphor for land. I mean, these things do affect us all. It do affect us. Does affect us all. So, kind of keep those things in mind because some things we have to do together.
Yeah, we need to all listen to some of these proposals with an open mind and think about. How can we do better? Something's broke.
Something's broke.
Let's see. There's lots of different ways we can fix it, and let's just get creative here.
All right. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. You know, here we are at the end of summer. The Iowa State Fair is come and gone, and as we were mentioning before, presidential candidates kind of descend on us for a while, and they...
School has started again.
Yeah, lots of things. You know, and those candidates are going to kind of keep in our mind for a while, and there's a whole year to go yet before the next presidential election. You know, democracy depends on an informed and engaged bunch of citizens. And I talked to a really interesting person this weekend that, at a potluck, of course, at the Map of My Kingdom Ag Arts event. I haven't talked to her in a long time. Monica Leo. Monica Leo has been doing puppets, theater, music.
Puppets?
Puppets. She's a puppeteer. She has been a puppeteer for 45 years.
So this is for children and adults?
Children and adults.
Because children don't vote.
But they will. They will. Monica Leo has, for many, many years, done the Eulenspiegel Puppet Theater since 1974. And she also has the Owl Glass Studio, where she makes stuff and gives classes and things. And we were talking about what she was doing. Monica, what are you doing now? She says, you won't believe this, she says. I've got a puppet show on the road now called The Big Election. And if anybody could do it, she could. The Big Election. It's fun, fantasy, and voter education. Here's a little bit about it. So who will win the big election? Will it be Benny the Beaver for progress or Terry E. Turtle for the environment? Listen to their stump speeches and decide who you want to vote for. But what about the colony of ants? There are zillions of them. They could change the outcome in worms. What will worms say? Will they count for anything? And Madam Owl up in the tree will report from the top of the tree about election coverage. So this is a show for children and adults. And Monica says, well, it's been very interesting. Everybody listens well, and we have to be told that now don't just vote for the cutest puppet. Vote for what they are saying. So, and they've had a fine run, and that'll be going on for a while. If you want to find out more about the Eulenspiegel Puppet Theater, you can go to their Facebook page.
What is that word?
Eulenspiegel. Eulen is an owl. Spiegel is speak.
Owl speaking.
Owl speak puppet theater company. It's always been called that. I don't know what. Learn more at theowlglass.org. You can Google that. Owlglass.org, and that'll get her to your studios. And owlglass.org, local events. So that's Monica Leo and the puppet show that she has going on right now called The Big Election. And I don't know, I'd kind of like to hear Mr. Beaver and Mr. Turtle kind of duke it out there. I bet they have a pretty good time. Yeah, a show about the political process. Donna, let's talk brunch. Just out of the blue, let's talk brunch.
Oh, yeah. So a few weeks ago, we had the Cornbread Boys on, Ryan and Brian. And they are the new restaurant that's in our historic train station building downtown. And Ryan is the pit master and the owner, and Brian is the chef. So I went for dinner the other night, and Ryan comes up, Donna, we just opened we're having brunch now, and we are so excited about the menu. And he thrust a copy, even though this was for dinner, he thrust a copy of the brunch menu, and I started reading. And you know what? These people are having a lot of fun. You read the menu, and you just want to go. So this is only on Sundays for brunch. They have things like, let's start with it. The bar menu, right?
Donna would start
brunch,
with the bar
right?
menu.
Well,
okay,
you order your drinks first, right?
Okay.
So you can have a Megamosa, which is 1 liter of Prosecco and orange juice. It's a party in a stein. Limit one per customer, right? They also have, of course, Irish coffee with Frangelico and Jameson's and hazelnut cream and Bailey. That's a loaded Irish coffee. And then they have a matcha mint julep with bullet bourbon and matcha tea and mint. They have three kinds of Bloody Marys, four kinds of coffees, and then juice and the usual things. Then, okay, now here's okay, this is called a Gigantaroll, right? It's a 2.5 pound cinnamon roll with whipped icing and whipped butter. It says it's meant to share with friends, enemies, and frenemies alike.
How do you...
Two and a half pounds?
2.5 pounds?
Obviously, you take your friends in and you order one for the table.
Many forks. Oh,
but
my.
But then the rest of the The dishes are great. Like, okay, he's got a Tex-Mex poutine, which is crispy smoked pork belly, house-cut fries, poblano gravy, esquites, which is his corn salad, cojita, which is Mexican cheese, chipotle sauce, and a fried easy egg and scallions. I think that's what I might order.
Poutine. You had to tell me what the poutine is.
Okay, so the poutine, it's traditionally a Canadian and maybe Quebecois, and it's French fries and some in beef gravy or something like that, you know. So this is a take on this, and this sounds like so much fun. They also have a bangin' Benedict marshmallow sweet potato waffle, house blueberry maple sausage, poached eggs, and an orange hollandaise with crispy fennel. That sounds like Sunday morning gloriousness.
Brunch is good. I love brunch because the fuss for you. That's good. I like to cook breakfast. That's okay. But I'm not going to make Eggs Benedict for myself. And which brings up, where did the term Eggs Benedict, who is this Benedict guy? I go to Wikipedia.
And what does Wikipedia say?
Wikipedia, Eggs Benedict is an American breakfast dish consisting of two halves of English muffin with a poached egg, hammer bacon, and hollandaise sauce. And, Delmonico's in Lower Manhattan said it was first created there in, the 1860s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they published a recipe for it. And the Benedict part. There was a guy named Lemuel Benedict. Commodore Benedict, a retired Wall Street stockbroker, said he wandered into the Waldorf Hotel in 1894 and hoped to find the cure for his morning hangover. And that's what he ordered. He ordered buttered toast, poached egg, bacon, and a hooker of holidays. I don't know what that means. Probably a little dish of holidays. But so Eggs Benedict is named after this guy named Commodore Benedict with a hangover. There we go. That's a good start.
Well, on the brunch menu, they do have something called the cure.
The cure, huh?
Yeah, right. Which is house ground beef patties, pickled bacon, jalapeno relish, chipotle aioli, an American cheese, and a bunch of other, and fries. So it's like a spicy hamburger. I guess the spice would be the cure, right?
Probably.
Get you going back again.
Yeah.
Did I mention the Full Monty?
No, that sounds... I like that movie. Okay.
Yeah. the Full Monty is a shaved, smoked pork collar with Gruyere, herb soft eggs, brioche, corn flakes, and peach jalapeno jam. I mean, this...
Wait.
Yeah.
Is this like all in one pile?
Yeah.
Corn flakes?
Yeah. Just get that little crunch in there or something, you know.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, we gotta go try some of this stuff.
This is amazing. Like I said, I do like when people make things for me for breakfast. I'm not one of these early morning, hit the ground running sort of people. So if I just sit there and someone serves me, that's very nice.
Clearly they're having lots of fun playing off the classics. So
very good.
That is Cornbread Restaurant downtown in our historic train station.
Think of brunch. Think of brunch. I had a good dessert last night. I went to Bar La Tosca, which is also an Ames
also
restaurant.
Also on Main Street, right.
And they Monday night is their small plates night, so you can go and try all sorts of things. But for dessert, they have this thing called a Bruno or Buddha, B-U-N-D-O, Bundo.
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 Bundo. Bundo, okay.
It is. It is.
Right, because they're Italian themed.
Yeah, it's Italian. It's a Bundo. And it is the biggest hunk of bread pudding that you've ever seen, warm. And there's gelato with it, which makes it yummy. But it's made with fresh figs and cherries.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is this only on Monday nights?
No, I think that's part of their, I don't know for sure. Check it out. Anyway, ask for the Bundo. I had to get it just to figure out what the heck a Bundo was, and there it was. I thought it was pretty good. Yeah.
Bundo. Not Budino. Something like that.
It starts with a B. Yeah.
Pudding-ish.
Something like that. Very good. It's nice to have good food in your community.
Yes, we're very lucky. We grow it. We eat it. We have it in restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to have people cook for you. I like that. I'll take this opportunity here to just do a small poem. This poem is about tomatoes because it's the season for tomatoes. And here's this poem. It is by a poet named Peter Balkian. He's the author of 7 books of poems and 4 books of prose. His book, Ozone Journal, won the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Poetry. He teaches at Colgate University. And I found this in a magazine. I get the Progressive magazine, and it was back in there. I like magazines that kind of slide in things. Here's a tomato poem. My mother hovered over the staked vines, the sweet fuzz of pale green stems. By August, the heavy air leaned on them. When the sky cracked with lightning, the stakes held the rain, and the fat beefsteak swelled. On a chopping board, I ran a serrated knife across their thin skins for thick slices. Water poured from the pulp and the seeds of the quadrants. Whatever churned out there in the news of irradiated rice paddies and burning white streets of America, whatever hurricanes was coming up from the unknown waters, whatever fate was brewing in the hungry lots across town, you, tomato, soaked up salt and bread. Nightshade of the sun, the Navajo called you. This is the Dunnell in the Kitchen. You are listening to KHOI. This is community radio. You can find out more about the Dunnell in the Kitchen at khoifm.org. We have a web page, and on that site, on the khoifm.org, you can find out about us. We have archives. We have recipes there. You can find a nice picture of us there on our web page. But you can also find out more about this radio station. There are lots of local people and people from across the nation that we have national shows and we have local shows, and it's really good here. It is really good. So this is community radio, and it's unlike anything else usually. We're not public radio. We are community radio. We are owned by this community. We get by with people just like Donna and I, who started out not knowing anything about radio, and here we are. Matter of fact, they'll let anybody on the radio. It's amazing.
Well, but we do know about food and farming. We learned about radio.
Everybody does their best here. Everybody does their best. So I want to mention again, you're listening to KHOI, and this is community radio, and we're centered here right in the middle of Iowa at Ames, Iowa. Yes, we are. All right, and And we've been listening to some really good music. This music is from a group called Gramini. And they're a group, some original music. It's called Germinations, a bluegrass symphony in D. And this little bit is called The March of the Cranes. So enjoy that. To dive into the food news items here, and I ran across something that included the name of somebody I've heard about before. There's a chef named Dan Barber, and he had some things to say about the global food crisis. Some people have not enough. Some people eat too much. We have to kind of figure this out here. And his suggestion is making yummier food, making better food. So there's less
I like that yeah? idea. Why not?
So people enjoy. So people are filled and satiated, and there's less waste.
You might as well enjoy the calories that you must eat.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So tell us who Chef Dan Barber
okay,
is.
Okay, so Dan Barber has two. He's a very highly James Beard awarded New York City chef, and he also has another restaurant slightly up north of the city in Stone Barns, which is a nonprofit kind of agricultural think tank, and they grow their own food there. It was founded on the Rockefeller family estate, and it's basically, you know, helping people understand food systems, and they grow things very well there and very beautifully. And so Dan has a restaurant there which uses all the food that is grown at Stone Barns, and then he has another one in New York City called Blue Hill. And Dan has a book, what's the third plate, yeah, where he talks about actually some of these issues that were in this article that you've pulled up here from the Huffington Post.
Yes, and you think, okay, so what would this high-end, you know, very expensive restaurant, hoity-toity, I think.
Of course,
it better taste good at that price, right? But what does he have to say about food in general? Very interesting.
Well, he's this article was mostly about the seed company that he founded. Mm-hmm. What's it called? Rose 7, I believe. Mm-hmm. So he's working with some plant breeders at Cornell University, which is not that far from Stone Barns. And what they're breeding for is, unlike breeding for yield, they are breeding for flavor. Mm-hmm. And mostly at this point, it's for home gardeners. I'm sure that they... Mm-hmm. Because they're still in the developmental. And a couple of years ago, when I first read about this project, I thought, well, you know, if they're picking some good seeds, let's see. Let's grow some here in Iowa. So I hauled off and bought some, and I handed them some to Lana and some to Helen Gunderson and some to my friends Paula and Gio. So we put them in some gardens around Ames, and tell me what you found. We had one success.
I had one success. I don't know how the other folks did.
Helen did well with this one, too.
Oh, okay.
Helen
See, Gunderson. Everything, yeah. Seeds grow in different places. Seeds grow in different places. I had a good luck with something called a habanana pepper. Not a habanero and not a banana pepper, but obviously, from how it looks, kind of a cross between the two. A very tasty...
Small, like an inch and a half to 2 inches.
Bright orange, pretty.
Yeah, looks like it should be.
It looks
hot
like it
as
kill
all
you,
get out,
but it doesn't. But okay, a tasty pepper. Matter of fact, I put it in my cucumber salad. Pretty, and it's
a very thin, not too meaty pepper, but it does. It has a lot of flavor, with only a hint of heat.
Yeah. It's interesting,
and it grows well here.
Yeah, and from this article it says. it might be seem impractical that you're trying to grow for taste here, but here's a quote. Intergovernmental panel on climate change suggests that farming will need to yield more crops using less energy in the next few decades to feed a growing population without wrecking the planet. And Barber makes a persuasive case for the many ways that pursuing flavor can drive sustainable eating habits and positively transform the food system. So as he's busy with his Row seven.
Seed company.
It's not only taste. He's grabbing the seeds and propagating those that are doing well. He talks about 2009 on his one of his gardens. Absolute tomato blight on the East Coast. Absolute. We know what that's like when their tomato blight comes through. All the tomatoes were sort of belly up in the garden, except a heirloom variety. And, of course, one's going to say, ha, what does that tomato have that the others don't? So they grabbed onto that variety and are propagating that one. We'll see what that does. There's other things that he's doing, really interesting. He's got this variety called, it's a squash, honey nut squash. We're familiar with a butternut squash. Butternuts are these things that sort of look like a big peanut, you know, laying there in your garden. And they they come in different sizes, but they tend to be pretty big. And they're good. They're tasty as things go. But
they're a little bland.
But Dan, wait a minute here. We can improve on
right.
this.
One of the first questions he said to his plant breeders, why can't you make a butternut squash that tastes good?
What a good idea.
So they did, and they're calling it a honey nut.
A honey nut squash. It's about, it's smaller. It's like they took all the good stuff and it does.
Concentrated the flavor.
Concentrated. It has 70% less water in it. Which is, it's like you sort of squished it all
right,
down.
So they claim since it's less water, every bite of honey nut is about 10 times the flavor and nutrients of a butternut.
So they kept all the good stuff.
So it's more nutritious, too.
Kept all the good. Now,
hallelujah.
See, we can do that. That has something to do with taste. And I wish to report. That one has been around for a while because I've seen it in some catalogs and things. I was walking up.
Four years, maybe.
Yeah. I walked up and down the local farmer's market, and I looked over there, and one of the vendors, and I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was Fisher's Farm, but at the Ames Farmers Market. But it's one of the vendors, sort of right next to where Becca the Balloon Lady is. So find Becca the Balloon Lady and go west, and it was down that line someplace. They had a box of.
Oh, they've got the honey nuts here right in our farmer's market.
I recognize them because they look like a butternut. They're smaller and they're a little darker. They're kind of like, they're a little heftier.
Stunted butternut.
And yes, it was labeled honey nut. So, yes, you can get them around here. And now that I know the history of it, I'm going to have to look myself up some seeds there, too.
Right. You can buy one and plant the seeds next year.
I assume it would
work. Save your own seeds, probably.
Or contact the Row 7 people. They also have another interesting
squash
thing.
He says, we just released a squash called Center Cut that is, it's a squash that looks very much like a porterhouse steak, and it's stunningly delicious and tastes like meat. It says, who needs meat when you have something that tastes this delicious, is what Barber says. He says, tonight we'll be serving it as a last course steak on the tasting menu with an accompaniment of cream spinach and potatoes. It is going to have a rich Bordelaise sauce. So you just put the meat sauce on the squash.
That's
good. Yeah, you don't need your Beyond Burgers there.
Right. We already have Beyond Burgers. There's other vegetables.
We've got squashes.
Other things to eat.
We can use mushrooms. There are all
other
kinds
things
of meat
to
substitutes
eat.
That That's are good. Actually yeah. vegetables.
And Dan Barber, another quote here, this is not a call to vegetarianism. It's a call to deliciousness.
Now, yes.
It's not saying you shouldn't eat meat. It's just like...
You can eat lots of things.
Let's kind of explore all the rest of
this stuff.
My
favorite saying is you can't eat too many vegetables. There's no such thing as too many vegetables, right?
I don't think so. Oh, here's another interesting thing. Dan was looking out at his garden and looking. He's got some plant breeder scientist folk stuff. And he says, so, look at all that squash out there. Look at all those vines. They are now breeding a squash where the plant itself is edible. The green leaves.
Oh, like some people eat sweet potatoes, yes. Vines, or
is that good or
pea
what?
Greens.
Is that good or what?
Yeah.
So we can do this. And that's the kind of things that we've talked about it earlier. Money into research, like at land-grant universities, perhaps, would be a good idea.
Right, because I suspect that Dan Barber is not patenting these seeds. Mm-hmm. I would suspect that that's not his object.
Anyway.
After all, he's doing well enough in other businesses. So
that's very good. So that's an article, Dan Barber, the chef, talking about breeding for delicious.
Row seven seeds.
Row seven seeds. Give it a try. And I did like that little pepper I grew. That was pretty, I'll grow that one again. Yes, I will. And matter of fact, that little pepper, I started one from a slip, and it grew in my house all winter. Not exactly liking the house in the winter, but it did grow all winter. It's a very nice house plant next to the window. Ah.
And then you just put it out in the summertime?
Yeah.
I was going to read, going along with these issues. So PFI has a listserv where farmers and other people write in and make comments. And today there was a letter from John and Beverly Gilbert. And among other issues they mentioned, I'm just going to quote you this. I ran across the following, this is John, I'm assuming, could be Beverly, but anyway, I ran across the following brief in the May 25th issue of that radical rag, Horde's Dairymen. Okay, the world's population is getting older. That's the headline. For the first time ever, there are more people over 65 years of age than there are under 5 years old. That's according to the number shared by Deutsche Bank. The world's 5 and under population has held relatively steady for the last two decades, while the group over 65, that's us baby boomers, continues to grow. Economists say that this trend is at least in part to declining fertility rates. In general, fertility rates around the world have fallen below, quote, replacement levels, or below a level that can support population growth. Then they say, let that sink in. So what is this justification for all-out production by Big Ag and the commodity cartel? Is it possible that the argument is just a ruse to dupe farmers? We were saying, got to feed the world. What are we going to do with a growing population? Well, in fact, some of those dire predictions about population growth are turning out to not be true. And I have read elsewhere that, you know, if you give it women control over their fertility, they will opt to have less children. And I think that's because, of course, a mother wants to make sure she has enough resources to raise every child well. And, of course, every time you have more children, the resources for the family get divided yet again. So, you know, maybe we're not going to have this population growth explosion.
Well, maybe we can spend our time doing quality instead of quantity.
Yes,
I like
maybe
that
we
idea.
Can have food that tastes better good. Instead of just so much more of the same.
Ha! Very good. Today we talked about cucumbers and food policy and puppets and tomatoes and seeds and lots of things.
Nice music and a good poem, Lana.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We'll go out with some more music by the band Grammony. We'll go out with an original tune by Mike Bell called Thunderbird. Yes, listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen every Tuesday. We're live at noon on Tuesday. And we're repeated Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. if you can't get enough of us, or anytime at khoifm.org.
Right, you can just go in and download it like a podcast. There you go.
And we can listen to us more
than
once.
Yeah, you can listen to it while you're doing your yoga or your bicycling
or
at the gym or cooking, yes.
Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering and a fine report on the Pub Fiction event by Cynthia McClure. Eat good food and enjoy life.